businesses, of helping these business owners be in business for themselves, but not by themselves, was something that I could take across any industry.
Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. I hope you enjoy this episode with Lisa Merry, president of Junk Kings. Today, we're discussing how Lisa went from school teacher to the C-suite, how Junk Kings is making a positive impact on the planet with their repurpose, recycle, resell program, how the top quartile franchisees are doing over $2 million in revenue, and the benefits of joining Neighborly, a $7 billion global home service behemoth. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
Your background is just tremendous. You've been a part of some big brands.
Yes, it's fun. Franchising is amazing.
You're now at Junk King, which I believe is the second largest waste and junk removal company in the country.
You are correct.
Big brand owned by Neighborly, which is the largest home services franchisor in the country.
Global, right?
Global. It is global. It? You are correct.
Give us a number. Multi-billion dollar company. Neighborly, what, 27 brands?
So 30 brands.
30 brands.
That include all the international, 19 brands that are here domestic. And they're approaching $7 billion in total top-line revenues.
Can you imagine if Don Dwyer heard that?
When he started many, many years ago with a single brand that currently is called Rainbow Restoration. It used to be Rainbow Carpet Cleaning.
Okay.
And back in the early 70s, they used to dye carpets, like color carpets, because you bought a carpet that was so strong and industrial. If you wanted to change the look and feel of your home, somebody would come in and actually dye your carpets.
Interesting.
Versus the world today where we just throw everything away, which makes Junking an amazing company for
that's
you.
That's right.
What a segue.
So let's talk about that, right? So I was looking back at the beginnings of Junking. Some of the largest companies in the world were started by two friends in someone's garage in Silicon Valley. In franchising, of course, the one that's making the biggest impact on the planet, right, that we care a lot about, is Junk King, which was also founded by two friends in California in their garage. So what makes Junk King different?
Sure. So you started, Justin, by talking about our roots, right? How we started. And it was absolutely Mike Andriacki and his best friend in their garage with a single truck. But when they started it, they went full in. They didn't start with a pickup truck with slats on the side. They fully spec'd out a dump truck and made it big and red with, you know, just gold, shiny, sparkly paint on it so that you would see it coming down the road. So they both had that entrepreneurial spirit and very, very innovative from the start. And what they found was they quickly grew to 2 and 3 trucks and realized, oh my gosh, I can't park all this just in my driveway. So they went and got a warehouse. What that allowed them to do almost by accident was to start really sifting through what they were finding and what they were picking up. And being in California, as you know, recycling is a big initiative, not just in California anymore, but nationwide and even globally. When we talk about global initiatives, it became a big part of what they did as the founders, is not only to pull metal, pull cardboard, pull all of your appliances, e-waste, to make sure everything gets recycled properly. But they also found that we truly could live by one man's junk as another man's treasure. And we're able to take these used items that we pick up from people's houses and find opportunities to donate them. And that is probably one of the biggest ways that Junk King separates itself in this industry. We can talk about our different revenue lines that we do both full service and self-service with dumpsters. No other company combines those two. But what really sets us apart from a value standpoint is that we truly do strive to recycle, repurpose, reuse up to 60% of every single truck. Imagine the places we could donate to: veteran shelters, veteran women's shelters, We could work closely with youth organizations like the Boys and Girls Club. You'd be surprised how many ping pong tables we pick up in the course of a year, right?
I bet.
It's amazing.
So I want to go back to kind of your beginning, and then I want to get into your background is fascinating. And if you could take us back to how you even got here, that would be great, because I think that your background is just super impressive, and it will really tee up how did you end up becoming the president of this brand. And then I think people, the audience, will quickly understand, wow, she's a rock star. So go ahead, give us the beginning and dad's famous advice. I love that story.
So when I started in college, I was in high school back in the 80s, and I was very strong in math. So all of my guidance counselors wanted me to go into engineering because computer science wasn't even a thing back then. I did an internship or two while I was in college in my freshman and sophomore year, and realized growing up in Western Pennsylvania that really the Bureau of Abandoned Mine Reclamation and looking at sulfur creeks and stuff was just not my cup of tea. And so I talked with my father and I told him, I said, you know, I really want to be a teacher. I'm so outgoing and I love working with kids. And he said, absolutely not, because they make $2 a day. You need to go towards engineering. And we agreed that I would graduate with a degree in mathematics. Little did I know that that was going to serve me very well in my business career going forward. Eventually, I wore him down like any good daughter does, and I became a teacher. And he was 100% right. I made $2 a day. So I had to have a second job. And I became a tutor at a company called Huntington Learning Center. Little did I know, it was a franchise company. So as I got involved with Huntington, I fell in love with their methodology when it came to education. And after about 3 years in the classroom, while I was doing both classroom teaching as well as tutoring, Huntington offered me a full-time position at one of their locations in Philadelphia. And I was like, why not? I'm young. I'll try this. Little did I know, 30 years later, I would still be franchising. I started with Huntington as a part-time tutor. I became a center director, which is running one of the locations. And then I ended up in their corporate office where I was a franchise business consultant, then the VP of operations, eventually became their chief operating officer. I was with them for 16 years. When I finally decided to leave that organization, I didn't want to go to the competition. So I went into commercial cleaning. What that taught me, Cliff and Justin, was that the skill set of working with franchise owners, of running businesses, of helping these business owners be in business for themselves, but not by themselves, was something that I could take across any industry. So I worked for Coverall Health Based Cleaning for about 6 or 7 years, running their entire West Coast division. And then I was recruited as the chief operating officer into School of Rock, which is another kid-based organization, right? I was with them for about 2 years. And then, believe it or not, Huntington recruited me back. They were going through a generational transition. We built a management team around them. I was in contract with them for 2 years. And when I finished, I took the summer off and I had one of the recruiters reach out to me and say, I found this amazing company. I know that it's the perfect fit for you. They're right on that edge of going from an emerging brand to a really tenured brand, and they're just going to take off. I can see it. And I was living in Florida at the time. And, you know, the story's funny because I swore to my sisters from Florida I was not going to move any further west than Chicago, because that way I'm still just one time zone away and a quick flight. And I ended up going from Florida to San Francisco, as far away as you could possibly get across the entire country. But the recruiter is right. It was an amazing company. All you have to do is meet Mike Andriocchi for 15 minutes and he can sell ice to an Eskimo. So I was moving my entire life here to San Francisco and figuring out, how do I become a junk girl, right? How does that fit into my world of professional expertise? And again, what we found was the skill set when it comes to working with franchise owners, understanding a P&L. And even though my family didn't understand, how are you going to go from educating our youth to hauling junk? I'm kind of saving the planet one truck at a time, because we are so focused on recycling.
When you took the role, Lisa, was the company owned by Neighborly at the time?
No, Mike Andriocchi had just sold to the first private equity. They're called Norwest Venture Partners, and they're actually based out of Palo Alto. That's kind of how they found them. They're mostly focused in biotech and IT, of course, being in Silicon Valley. But they saw this company and decided, hey, let's see if we can play in franchising a little bit. And just like any PE, their goal was to come in and buy it and flip it in 5 years. And we actually did it in 3.5. So, you know, they were quite happy with the transaction.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands on a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710 or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you. So that's interesting, though, because you got to see the company then pre-Neighbourly and now operating underneath Neighbourly. Talk about what that transition's been like and the difference now in operating under, again, the biggest home services umbrella in the world.
Yeah, it's certainly exciting. I mean, we couldn't have chosen a better partner. When you think about Neighbourly and the 19 brands that are even domestically here, what it does for our franchise owners is we had a great support system just in Junk King. And, you know, whether it be the franchise business consultants or even the franchise owners themselves that work so well together, and they're such a tight-knit family. And now what we were able to do with our Neighbourly partnership is basically insert them in their own special, unique B&I group. Because now they have franchise owners from these other 19 brands in each and every market, whether it be Pittsburgh or Palm Beach or Atlanta or here in San Francisco. And they can get together and they can share marketing costs and find ways to work together to support and grow their businesses. So it allowed us to go from a single brand just fighting the fight every day to now being part of this organization that has, instead of 150 franchise owners, 6,000 franchise owners. So it really helped expand their community, both just from a peer group as well as how do we solve business problems. There's no question we're going to solve it at the Neighbourly level.
Neighbourly is impressive. You know, I am curious. Justin and I have recruited people from Neighbourly because we love the culture, right? And I'm talking about the Dina Dwyer culture, the original Don Dwyer, Dina Dwyer culture of, you know, respect and live rich and all that. One thing that I've always impressed with, if two or more people entered a room, they went into prayer. Is the brand still a faith-based brand, or has that shifted after all these acquisitions?
So when you get into the bigger PE world like we are today, there's definitely a shift from faith. We have to be careful when you put that as the forefront of anything. But what they have stayed true to, Cliff and Justin, is that code of value. Whether we go through the short version or the long version, anytime there's two or more people in a room, we're quoting that code of values. And we could pick one out of the 14 that we're going to focus on that day or for that meeting. But it does allow us to really ground that conversation in something that's positive and constructive right from the start.
Just for the audience, the Live Rich, this mantra that you all live by, just could you give us the acronym?
Sure. What it means to live rich is that you're going to have respect, integrity, customer focus, and of course, always having fun in the process. We want to make sure that although business is always a serious conversation, we want to make sure that we're still enjoying our job, because that, as you know, creates everyone to have the best conversations and bring the best ideas to the table and not fear, you know, bringing something that might seem like it's out of left field. Like, you're in a safe space, which is always fun.
Absolutely. I don't want to spend too much time on Neighbourly, but I am curious. The idea was, let's acquire all these complementary home service brands, and then we will, you referred to the BNI, we'll be able to cross-pollinate, cross-refer to each brand. Are you seeing the results today where a Junk King pulls into town and is quickly receiving referrals from a Rainbow Restoration Company, you know, or a Window Genie, et cetera? Are you seeing it? Is it happening?
Not only sharing the customers where you might see that Window Genie and Junk King truck both pull up to a customer, but also able to support each other. So think about Rainbow Restoration. You have this, you know, water heater that blows up and you got to tear out all the drywall. Well, does Rainbow want to use their employees to then try to put it in their van and take it to the dump and sit in the line for 2 hours? Or do they just call Junk King because they put it all on the side of the road and we drive by and pick it up and they put their crew on to the next money-making job? You know, the focus of this is the pursuit of profit, right? That's the title of our podcast. And when you think about ways that now the brands can work together to even support each other, there's so much opportunity there as well from a business perspective.
Yeah.
Well, and if you own a home or have ever owned a home, it's the most frustrating thing when you have a plumber, but you don't have an electrician, or you have a good lawn guy, but you can't find a good window guy. What I find is that the goal under that neighborly umbrella is to say, not just how do we own the home? Of course, we're a business, so we want that piece of it. But it is also, how do we keep that homeowner satisfied and well taken care of? Because ultimately, our goal is to make their lives easier. Then they become the referral source for us. We don't even need our own brands referring to each other. They're telling everybody on the block, these are the only people you want to use.
You're so right. In my house, we call it, I got a guy. We're New Yorkers, and we have to
have
a guy. I
got a guy.
I got a guy. And Neighborly is like, that's a lot of guys.
Yeah. You have very few people. You have to go out of the circle to find the guy. We got it.
Right. They want it to be, if you, anything that you could possibly need in or around your house, think Neighborly, there's a brand that could do it. The other thing that I just wanted to kind of highlight here, just because private equity has such a love affair with home services right now, and they're buying up these brands, and in many cases, bringing someone in who has no experience in franchising to run the company. And I think a lot of times these presidents have a hard time really understanding, you know, someone who has no experience as a small business owner, making probably one of the largest investments of their lives, feeling all of this fear and anxiety, and then hoping that the brand is going to be there to support them and understand what they're going through. Like you just mentioned, how do I read a P&L? I've never had to do this before. Just normal business and people problems. Your background in multiple roles as franchise business coach, VP of ops, COO, COO, being out there actually in the field working with franchise owners, you understand the psychology of what's going on with these people. I think that's invaluable.
And I think what you're going to find, Justin, is that as PE gets more involved in the home services market and in franchising in general, that's really what I hear them looking for when you sit in the bigger meetings to say, oh, you know, private equity wants to come in and buy X, Y, and Z. They're saying, how do we do that but find an operator or find a leader who at least understands that? There's something very unique about franchising that is both a positive and a negative. So when you think about that candidate that you just talked about, somebody who is saying, do I leave my job? Do I take that step? Do I invest everything I have because I have this incredibly strong entrepreneurial spirit? I want to be my own boss. In any franchise, you have this franchisee who is always going to be in that push-pull with the franchisor because they are entrepreneurial spirit. They do want to be their own boss. But we as the franchisor provide them with a system that when you talk to the strongest franchise owners in any brand, they're going to say, what's the secret sauce? What makes you successful? And the first thing they say is, I follow the system,
which is
hard because you're in that, I want to be my own boss, so I want to do it my own way. And what the best franchise owners figure out how to do is follow the system, but bring their own personality to that system, bring their own grit to that system, but not try to come in and reinvent the wheel. And I think that's what private equity is learning, right? Is how do we manage all that emotion and all of that angst, as you call it, around helping these franchise owners be successful? Because you can drop any number on the top line, but if $0 of it drops to the bottom line for their profit, that's an unhappy franchise owner. If you start to help them learn how to build that profitability and create generational wealth is what the IFA, the International Franchise Owner Association, talks about all the time. That's where you get happy franchisees that then promote your brand for you and create such a strong environment because they also become leaders in that franchise community that help the other franchise owners say, stop doing things that you're actually hurting yourself for just because you want to be right.
Totally. I want to put this out there because it happens every day. This happens. It happened yesterday and it happened to be Mr. Sparky. Okay. This is the conversation. I'm an electrician. Why would I buy an electrician franchise? What are they possibly going to do for me? What? And more to the point, electrician, at least you need licensing. He was probably a journeyman. He was an apprentice. He cut his teeth in becoming an electrician. Let's break that down to just picking up heavy things and putting them in a truck. Why would I buy a junk hauling business? I could just do that myself. I hear this every single day.
Right.
I love to hear Lisa Mary's response.
So I think, Plinth, my standard answer to that, anytime I hear it, because believe me, I hear it often as well, is that there is no business owner in the world that is a unicorn. And what I mean by that is that the guy you just described may be an incredible electrician. Nobody could match his skills when it comes to fixing any single thing in the world of electronics. I don't care if it's a single light switch to like the entire electricity in the San Francisco airport. He can handle it. The question is he that good at marketing? Is he that good at bookkeeping? Is he that good at logistics? If he is truly going to scale his business beyond just his single ability to be the best electrician ever, how does he train a crew of 90 electricians as he grows and scales his business? How does he even find the business from a marketing standpoint to have a website that works, to have pay-per-click, to have all the marketing tactics that it takes, and all of those marketing tactics firing on all cylinders? The biggest thing about joining a franchise is that we expect you to come to the table with some skill set. You might be an incredible banker and you have finance figured out, but you want to be a junk hauler because it looks cool. Okay, great, but you probably don't know how to manage men when it comes to this level of labor. That's probably not your strength. So you're going to come to us for all the training that we have for that. You're going to come to us for all the systems and processes. If I asked you to go and grease a truck, you might stand there and go, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do with this grease gun. Where do I put it? Am I putting it on a hinge? What am I doing? Like, every brand is going to have those specific things where you could have the person who is the best operator and then needs the system for all of those back office, back room things. And that allows them to scale and be 10, 15, 20 times more successful than they could ever be on their own. So I do think that unless you are a unicorn, which there are those founders out there like Mike Andriocchi when he started Junking, like the Dwyer Group when they started their very first company, they had the vision of what they needed. And then if you look at what they did after being a good operator, they started bringing people into their organization that was good in marketing, somebody that was good in finance, somebody that was good in technology.
And that's where we just say, as a smart business person, you'll probably figure it out. But why? Why go through
right.
all that
why
pain?
Why take all your time? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Just buy the brand. True. Buy the brand. How many junk people are actually able to scale to the level of a typical junk king? Not many of them.
Right. It's any of my franchise owners will tell you, you know, there's one company bigger than us and there's about three or four that are behind us, right? We're a strong number two and the ones behind us are half or less of our size today. The biggest competition that my franchise owners face in any market are those regional guys, right? The ones that have four or five trucks, but they're not bigger than a single city or bigger than a single state. And it's those regional people that will probably never join a franchise because they feel like they have it all figured out, you know?
To further the point of what we're saying, when someone comes like the electrician says, I'm an electrician, I'm an employee, why would I do this? We also meet on a daily basis people who are already painting homes and pressure washing and hauling junk. And I love probing their business because they're all the same. How long have you been doing this? Oh man, 15 years, right? What are you doing in top line gross revenue? They never know their numbers, by the way.
Never. It's good. It's good. That's what they'll say.
They don't know net income from a fishing net. And then you start to explain the average revenue of a Junk King or the average revenue of a Serta Pro or the average revenue of, you know, a Genie King or a Coverall or whatever brand. We're right. always superior. Franchising is always superior in average revenue to just the average person that jumps on the phone with us and tells me they don't need a franchise.
Cliff, here's right. the bottom line with that person. What that person knows is that they're really busy.
Yes.
Right? They're probably busier working in their business, trying to figure all this stuff out than a franchisee that has a multi-million dollar business with really tight buttoned up systems in place. All they know is that they're really busy, so they couldn't even imagine being any busier than they are.
And the key there is to help educate them that you can double your business and get back double the time you have today to actually have a life outside of business. And I think that's where that balance comes in is, you know, when you have those regional or local people, if they are knee deep in the business, yes, they're making a decent living. Do they have any time for themselves? Do they have any time to actually enjoy those spoils or not? Are they always faced with the next marketing challenge or the next tax challenge because they didn't do something correctly in their books? That could be frustrating.
So Lisa, as a segue to this, I've used some businesses, and I've personally used services like yours many times. I've flipped houses. I've done a lot of work. We have rental properties. I view it as a commoditized business, and I want you to address just some of these high-level comments. I view it as commoditized. I view it as it's price and time to me, right? How much and when can you get here type thing. How do you compete? When I'm ordering a dumpster, it literally just sounds like this. I need a 30-yard open container. How much? And then I hang up. And I go to the next one. I need a 30-yard open container. How much brought to this house in Delray Beach, Boca Raton, whatever? How does Junk King, how do you separate yourself from that commoditized consumer like me that really just wants to know how much and when can you get here?
Right. So I think there's two things. Number one, we have a full-blown call center at Junk King. So every call gets answered by a person, which is good. And they talk through, because 75% of our business is B2C, and our average ticket is only $380. Our standard customer, we're coming in and cleaning out a single room or a garage or an attic or taking two couches and a Barca lounger out so they get new furniture. So it is absolutely, you're only going to run into two objections on the phone in my call center at any time. Can you get here today, tomorrow, and how much is it going to cost? Ultimately, it is just simply answering those questions to the best of our ability. We come out and do a free estimate, so it helps that we're able to come out and look at what you have. There's oftentimes things that people don't know how to get rid of. If I only have a Toyota Camry, how do I get rid of the extra couch that's in my garage? You know, when you're dealing with the general population of consumers, that conversation is much easier. On the B2B side, which is kind of where you're playing Cliff when you're talking about flipping houses or doing rental properties, then it is just basically, hey, let me go online, let me tell you exactly what I need, let me pick my time and have the crew show up and take care of it. So we can kind of handle both situations very easily. But again, we do talk about the fact that our truck bin, the dumpster on the back of our regular hauling truck, is an 18-yard bin compared to most of our competition, which is smaller. So even though we're evenly priced, you're always going to get more volume for your money. And we do live by the today, tomorrow appointment, that we are going to figure out how to fulfill that to make sure that we hit that need. Because I do, when we talk marketing with franchise owners, I do kind of equate it to Jiffy Lube. Like, you think about Jiffy Lube, and their biggest marketing tactic is to put a coupon in a val pack, because they know you're going to pull the coupon and throw it in the drawer. You know you need an oil change, you just don't know when it's going to happen. And when you do, you pull the coupon out. Well, you've been staring at this crap in your house for a very long time. And one day you're going to make the decision to get rid of it, and we have to be ready to take it that day or the next. It's all about logistics and time. That's, we are at heart, yes, we're a junk hauling company, but we're a logistics company when it comes down to it.
Are you, just have a few follow-up questions, if you just bear with me here. Are you providing the bag with the hook that will haul it out?
The latest business line that we introduced to the franchise owners last summer was we went and built our own 3-yard dumpster bag. So it's a big red bag with a crown on it. We just spun up an Amazon store where now it's going to be accessible to the entire United States public. Anywhere that we service, you'll be able to buy one. And whether you use it for yard waste or small projects or just throw it in your garage until it gets full.
Wow.
So now we'll have three business lines. You'll have full service where we come and do all the work. You'll have a dumpster that we can drop in your driveway, or you're going to have the opportunity for what we call the Junk King dumpster bag.
This is a Pursuit of Profit exclusive. I love breaking news on this podcast.
Breaking news. But now going into this summer, the big hurdle, I guess you could say, again, striving towards profitability for our franchise owners, is to put it on a distribution that literally every single person touches almost every single day. I have yet to find somebody who doesn't go on Amazon at least 2 or 3 times a week.
I love the 3-yard, because 10-yard container is like the starting. So you already have the 10-yard or the 12-yard, right?
Correct.
And then you can work your way up, and now you have a 3-yard. I'm cleaning out my mom's garage, and she's like, I need a dumpster. And I said, I'm just going to go get the bag. No one knows about the bag.
But do you know why?
Why?
Because Waste Management was the only one who made the bag. And Waste Management doesn't do any advertising. Their primary business is in route hauling, just your normal garbage routes. So this to them was just kind of sprinkled on the top of like, hey, look at this. We could throw some extra revenue our way. Now that they're going to have competition, it's exciting. Part of the reason when we duplicated the bag and we were going to have our own is that if you look at that keyword, when you talk about advertising and spending dollars like all franchise owners do, nobody owns that keyword today. So we could walk into a completely untapped market and for very minimal advertising, get the message out there to all the consumers. This is now available to you and it's available on Amazon. Go get it.
That's great. Good for you. I have a question about, there was a competitor, and I really like this. I would like you to address it. And they said, look, used to pick up garbage. Let's say we charge the homeowner $380 to pick up their garbage. Then we would take it to the landfill and have to pay a premium to unload that garbage. What we realized is that people were throwing out really good stuff, like nice stuff. So we started to get some warehouse space and we would take only that nice stuff and put it into this warehouse and throw that nice item on Facebook Marketplace and monetize what we just charged to pick up instead of paying to dispose of it. We now just monetize picking it up and selling it again. I hear a lot of the recycling piece from you, but I'm not hearing the, we actually will take these nice items and sell them. Are you doing that? Or
sure.
Are you just recycling? You are.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. And basically at the individual franchise level, because one thing you'll learn, Cliff, about recycling or reselling, you need hours to be able to do that. So whether you're sorting all of the material as it comes back to the warehouse, or you have to post it on Facebook and three people have to come and look at it and two people don't show up, like it's just a very labor cumbersome process to do any of that. If you look at the statistics from a municipality or a city or a state level, even if you fill your recycling bin, the blue bin or the blue container, only about 15% of it actually gets recycled because, you know, it's contaminated because you threw a pizza box in there with an oil stain on it or something. It's expensive and hard to recycle. But yes, as a revenue line for franchise owners, they do get money even just from taking metal to the metal yard or, you know, baling cardboard or that type of thing.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
There is outside of just the revenue that you get for hauling, there is also revenue on what you would consider the backroom operations, which is sorting things, reselling things, donating things. Because even if you get a donation receipt from donating to the different charities, again, that's a tax write-off for our franchise owners. So there are lots of ways behind the scenes after you've done the primary job of picking up the junk on how you can continue to make money and grow that profitability of that business.
Justin, this takes us right into item 19, investment level labor model. Let's start nailing that. That's really good stuff, Lisa. Love it.
Yeah, so let's talk about the model. So we start out the investment, Lisa, 90 to 180K is what I
Correct.
Saw in the item 7.
Yeah.
Okay, so we start with one truck.
You have one truck and you have a warehouse. You'll have some insurance expenses because in order to have the truck on the road, right, you have to have insurance on the truck. But one of the good things about Junking as a franchise model is it is a very low cost of entry. It's not like a restaurant where you have to build out the restaurant, get all the equipment, get all the inventory. You have to have a truck, insurance, and a warehouse. Then you're going to start to hire employees. But the employees are only going to work when you actually have jobs.
Okay. So, and how many employees in a truck? Two?
So there's two employees in a truck at any given time, and we require franchise owners to be open 6 days a week. So you're probably going to have a team of four so that you're kind of staggering them to get covered all 6 or 7 days.
Okay. One of my questions was, so you mentioned B2B and B2C. Typically, the B2B jobs require a bit more selling, like someone has to go out and build relationships, and then the B2C jobs are usually coming from corporates, ad spend, or ad efforts through the national call center. How much of the work
right.
is B2B? How much is B2C? And who's the customer? Like you mentioned someone sitting there just staring at a couch that they had wanted to get rid of for a while. Is it that or is it someone who's moving, relocating? Like
all of the above. So when you look at our mix from an item 19 standpoint, we're 75% B2C, 25% B2B. And the B2B customers come two different ways with JumpKing. Number one, we have a national account team. So we actually have national accounts because our footprint is strong enough that we can service, like think about a large property manager who manages all of the CVSs. all of the Dick's Sporting Goods, right? That they go through and they're going to change all their fixtures. And so they need somebody to come in and take away all those metal fixtures because now they're going to some kind of pliable plastic or shelves on the wall, whatever. We're going to be the ones that come in and do that because the property management company subs that out and they need somebody who can cover all the stores. So there's a percentage of that B2B that comes from us, the franchisor, through those national account programs. But then it really is part of being a franchisee in your local market is you need to go out and meet your property managers, your realtors, storage units, anybody who has, you know, an apartment complex, go to your B&I meetings and meet the Cliffs of the world who have a few rental properties and you want to be their guy, right? You want to be the guy that I have a guy. We're going to be that guy that comes in and takes care of anything. When you flip a rental property, I guarantee you, no one figures out how to move with the appropriate volume. Never figure out, right? Whether you use pods or an actual moving company, you always end up with three things left in the house. And now what do? You call us and we come and get it. Right?
Someone's burdened by it. Someone is always burdened by that left behind.
Yeah.
Whether it's a sofa, sectional, I've been there. They kick that can down the road. It always ends up with the landlord. Always.
It does. Yeah. So that's
a great
contact with, you know, the B2B side. But it does take a little feet on the street. Like you got to get out and you got to meet those people and make those relationships. And that's why being a franchise owner, being the business owner in the local market takes on that responsibility, right? They want to be the junk king in their market. If you go to our YouTube channel, you'll see probably 30, 40 different YouTube shorts where we introduce the franchise owners. And at the end, everyone has the hero pose and says, welcome to, you know, Junk King Fort Lauderdale. I'm the junk king. And it is about them being that face of our brand in their market.
It's usually the difference between the large, you know, top 25% President Circle franchisee and the average franchisee are those efforts, right?
Correct.
Those grassroots, guerrilla marketing, just one person sitting in the streets and getting out there a little bit more. You mentioned the item 19. Everybody wants to hear the numbers.
We love our item 19.
Let's do it.
So we actually go a step further in our item 19 because our goal is that a potential candidate can actually start to build a pro forma. Our P&L is relatively simple. We list all three COGS in our item 19 and the averages. Gas, labor, and dump. Those are the three things that are going to be your variable costs when you run a junk company. You have gas in the trucks. You have labor that's sitting both going into the homes, but also riding in the trucks around. And then the dump, like you talked about, Cliff, you have to take some of it somewhere to get rid of it. And that's an expense. The only other variable cost is your royalty and call center fee, which that goes up and down, but the percentage doesn't change. But those three, if you can control those three costs within the range that we publish in our item 19, that's going to allow you to start to put together a business plan or a pro forma. Because when you look at our fixed costs, again, you have a warehouse. We consider marketing a fixed cost. And then you're going to have some truck insurance and probably a truck payment. You're not usually going to start with one truck and hire a general manager, right? You're going to be the person who's the general manager. So our item 19 being as detailed as it is really allows that incoming candidate to say, how do I put this together and how many jobs or how much top line do I need to be able to get to that break even as quickly as possible and then become profitable?
Do you provide any top line revenue numbers?
Sure. Yeah. We do not only total revenue on top line, but then also we break out in a chart in item 19, hauling versus dumpsters, so that you can see if you just start with hauling, here are the ranges that as you add, you should be able to then, you know, grow exponentially based on that. Our latest item 19 is in our top quartile. The individual unit is 2.6 million is the highest revenue. We went through our item 19 is a bit unique because when I first came into the brand, just like any emerging brand, we sold huge territories, like all of North Atlanta. 3.6 million is with one franchise owner, and they were trying to service it out of a single warehouse.
Whoa.
In the northern part of Atlanta.
Unbelievable.
So one of the initiatives that the private equity gave to me was we need to shrink their territories. I'm like, first of all, this is your point about private equity not knowing how to talk to franchise owners. You never tell a franchise owner you're shrinking or taking anything away from them. Instead, we're going to make them multi-unit franchise owners. We're going to give them a gold star on their lapel because we're going to take that huge territory and instead of it just being called Atlanta North, now we're going to call it Gwinnett and Cobb County and Atlanta North. And what it did, because again, we're all playing the Google game, is it allowed the near me to really explode on a heat map in those two areas. So our item 19 has gone through a few phases. If you look at our top franchise owners, if you combine their multi-units, highest 10% are in the 4 to 5 million range total. And then ultimately, when he breaks down individual units, that's where you get to the 2.5 million in the top location and the ranges that you see in our current item 19 in the FDD that's out today.
So you do, I think you do single territory deals now. What does that territory Correct. Now look like that they have shrunk?
So population, when we sell a brand new territory, is 450 to 650. So we go on just pure population. You choose zip codes, and then, you know, we're selling at 12 cents a head. So most of our franchise fees are anywhere between 60 and 85,000, somewhere in that range.
That's a big territory.
It is. If you look at some of the other service brands, they're as low as 200,000 population, but we're comfortable with that 500, that half a million, that it's a good starting point. Now, I will tell you, here in the Bay Area, where the original Junk King started, we did take the peninsula, as you know, Silicon Valley, and we have it split up into, you know, 250,000. Number one, we're the biggest and the oldest franchise. But also, you know, as you start to look at things like revenue per head in those populated areas, that data will guide you as to how to expand and where to expand next. And it kind of goes back to that conversation about an individual business owner versus a franchise. Not many individual business owners are going to be able to sit down and do that kind of data analysis to say, where's the next best place to go to continue to scale your business and to do so smartly, right?
Very impressive. That is an impressive earnings claim.
It is. We're excited about it.
It might even be as impressive as like you said, you're quickly on your way to dethroning the number one junk caller. I won't say the name.
We won't say the name, but I like the dethroning reference. Nice job.
Yeah, that because I did some data on them. I think they have stop me if I'm wrong. You know your competitor better than I do. Do they have 160 locations? Does that sound about right?
In the United States.
$300 million in system-wide revenue?
Correct.
All right, that's with 1,500 trucks. That's $1.8 million per location. And they're averaging around 200,000 per truck. Does that sound right to you that if I said to you, I'm going to buy another truck, another Junk King, if I said to you, my goal is to do 200 grand per truck, are you saying, wow, why low, or that's right on the money?
No, it's about right on the money.
It's about right.
If you look at just some operational statistics, both from best practices and out of our operating manual, the goal is that you're doing 4 to 6 jobs a day per truck. So if you think about that times six
average
days
ticket.
A week times da-da-da-da, most individual truck, if it's running logistically perfectly, you can get between 25, 30,000 a month out of a truck. So if you annualize that, you're right at 200,000 is reasonable, because there's always going to be that margin of error where, you know, all of a sudden you're booked on that truck and to start pushing appointments out 2 days, you're going to lose that business, right? So like you literally have to be perfect. In our operating manual, we do have the rule that says if an average of 3 appointments per day per truck for a 10-day period, you need another truck. Like you need to start opening capacity, because your goal is to be available when the customer needs and not try to shove them into our open appointment in the calendar. Like you said, Cliff, you're making a phone call saying, how much can you get in here today? Nope. Okay. How much can you get in here today? They're going on to the next one. So our goal is to make our franchise owners stay just one step ahead of capacity so they can continue to scale and grow.
What were the COGS? What were the cost of goods? What were your curbs, as you said?
So if you look at dump fees, you want to be under 10% of your top line revenue. Gas should be anywhere between 3 and 4, depending on where you are in the country. And then labor should be right around that 19 to 21%.
So Lisa, if I'm doing 4 million in this business, 200,000 per van, I have 20 vehicles on the road, which means this is really a logistics business.
It is.
I'm assuming there's some impressive technology to help manage all that.
We do. We have an amazing point of sale system. And oddly enough, it was proprietary. It was generated by our founder, who, growing up in Silicon Valley, he knew exactly what he wanted this system to do. And he had access to the coders to be able to help him put it together. it rivals any of the platforms that are out there today for home services or any of the industries out there. And it gives our franchise owners not only the ability for the call center to immediately schedule on their availability, it shows our call center their pricing structure. And then we go a step further where all of our trucks are not only manufactured to our spec, but they're GPS, so that you'll be able to, during the course of the day, watch where all the trucks are going and are they crisscrossing and have we lost logistics efficiency? How do we make that better? It also helps, oddly enough, our franchise owners make sure they're controlling theft, because we are a bit of a cash business. And when you talk about the pursuit of profit, you need to make sure that you have your checks and balances in place. So that tool in the hands of our franchise owner is incredibly powerful, because not only can they see the profitability of a single truck in a single day and how that crew performed, but they also can have very, very strong checks and balances to make sure that you didn't just put $150 in the truck and you sat at that house for 2.5 hours. Something's wrong.
For those listening to this who have listened to the Pursuit of Profit podcast over the past couple of months, everyone's probably sitting there saying, you know, Justin and Cliff, every episode, they ask about the earnings claim, the item 19. And sometimes the founder or CEO will get quiet. Sometimes they'll say, I'm not allowed to share. Sometimes they'll say, I need to be really careful. And then here's Lisa saying, we love talking about our item. Like, it tells us everything we need to know. There's no guarantees, but we will be as transparent as possible. And we want to brag about the numbers because the numbers are real and the numbers are exciting. Incredible.
Yes.
I agree. You want to talk a little bit about what you're doing on that, I'll call it maybe philanthropic side, this Habitat for Humanity, women's shelters, donating trees. You actually did something in my backyard with the military makeover with Melissa Michelle in Boca Raton. That's where I am. Go ahead and talk a little bit about that. It's actually a pretty cool story, and I love how you're giving back.
Yeah. So again, you know, the recycling emblem or logo is embedded in our logo, and it goes beyond just pulling metal and cardboard and whatnot. But actually, again, how can we help our franchise owners become an integral part of their community and have that feel good back into the community that they live in and want to see thrive? And we talked about a few of the charities that many franchise owners work with, whether it be Habitat for Humanity comes in and builds 3 or 4 houses. If we know ahead of time, we can probably furnish 70% of that house just with tables and chairs and dressers and bookshelves and that type of thing. But then you go that next step and say, you know, who else and how else can we continue that real solid philanthropic value that we have? And we've come to the point where with our franchise community, about every other month, we have an organization that we work with. And one might be the American Heart Association, where when it's Heart Health Month, we're going to take a specific day and we're going to say we're going to donate $10 for every job completed on that day. We can talk about Earth Day, and our philanthropic event around that was we were planting a tree for every job completed on Earth Day. So as an organization, I think part of it is the fact that our founder, Mike Andriocchi, grew up in California. It seems to be always, you know, leading the country in what can we do for sustainability? You know, what can we do to help save the planet? And we're always finding new ways to be able to do that. I think it is something, you know, we talk about what is the next revenue line for our franchise owners. I want to see a subscription model for Junk King, where you can have them come once a year, twice a year, once a quarter, depending on how much stuff you buy from Amazon. I'll take it down to once a month, where we'll come in and break your boxes down, because I guarantee you that's somebody's fun job every weekend whenever, you know, somebody goes crazy buying things from Amazon. All of those things help make sure that we're constantly paying it forward. And, you know, when you take a look at Cincinnati is a perfect example. The Junk King in Cincinnati, if you pull up their Instagram page or their Facebook page, they work with no short of 60 different nonprofit organizations. One of my favorite is they partnered with the group that helps support foster children. And we pick up so much luggage. Think about, you know, the old 2 wheels is like totally out of style on a suitcase. You want 4 wheels now on your suitcase, but your suitcase isn't broken. Most foster kids have to move from home to home, putting their stuff in a garbage bag. And imagine if we donate all of our suitcases just to the local foster kid facility so it can move around, putting their stuff in luggage. When you talk about a feel good from a junk hauling company, we can't top that.
Love it.
Love it.
I have probably $1,000 worth of Tumi luggage sitting in a storage unit right now.
Then you need to have us come and pick up and we'll take it to the foster kid house.
Absolutely.
You give it to Uncle Cliffy. I'll take it.
You're so messed up. Could you let a foster kid have some luggage, please?
They don't need the Tumi. I'll give them my style. Take the Tumi.
We're good at that, too.
Swap, right?
Exactly. Swap it out.
Listen, what's old becomes new again. There's a whole trend right now with thrifting, and people like old stuff. Plus, old stuff is built with way higher quality than newer stuff.
Well, even think about, you go a step further with our partnership with Neighbourly. This is something we haven't even touched on yet, but it's, you always have ideas in your head. We pick up so much used appliances that are the old version that we should now give that to our Mr. Appliance partner, because there's probably parts in there that you could still manage to pull out and use because you can't find them anymore for the older dishwashers and washing machines. But some people won't give it up because they know the new one they get is going to only last them 3 years and then they're going to have to replace it again. So there's so many tentacles to each one of these businesses. And like we started at the beginning of this conversation, when you talk about that pursuit of profit, if now the Neighbourly brands can continue to find ways to work together and support each other, now I don't just have one franchise owner becoming more profitable. Now we're spreading it across all the brands at Neighbourly.
This is officially a record. Lisa has mentioned pursuit of profit more than any other guest on our pod. Love it.
God bless her.
Representing.
Lisa, you're amazing. You are incredibly impressive. I know why you're at the helm. That is crystal clear, blindingly clear. Love what you're building. Love the brand. And this is just another story that reinforces what we tell people. You don't have to spend $500,000 on a brick and mortar brand to create wealth. You just don't. There are so many non-brick and mortar brands that are half the investment, a third the investment, that you can scale the crap out of and do very, very well. So I really appreciate your time and being on the show. Thank you so much.
A great time. Thanks, Cliff and Justin.